This is Gary Wakefield, and you're listening to Queer Life Stories. Our podcast is recorded in La Truita, home of the Palawa people. We acknowledge the traditional owners of country, their diversity, histories and knowledge, and their continuing connections to land and community. We also acknowledge LGBTIQA+ advocates, friends and allies whose courage and strengths have helped to make this a more just society for lesbian, gay, bisexual, gender diverse and intersex populations and their families.
So my name is Corey. My pronouns are he, him. I'm 23. Yes, I'm 23. And I identify as gay or queer or something along those. And cisgender. I'm basic bitch queer. Can I swear?
Yeah.
Okay, good. So I grew up on the west coast of Tasmania in a place called Strawn, which has a standing population of, last I checked, less than 600 people, so very, very, very small. And my parents were subpar is the polite way to phrase that, perhaps. I grew up in an unhealthy home, so pretty isolated background for me.
So were you an only child or?
No, I have there were three siblings that I lived with, some full, some half, and I lived with my stepmom and my dad from the age of three until I was about 17 is when I moved out.
What was family life like?
For me, it was – so I grew up in an abusive home. So there was a lot of kind of physical and verbal violence. And then kind of as I got older, that stopped, but the emotional kind of abuse continued, even throwing some financial abuse for a bit of flair. And it was pretty brutal and all under the guise of normality. So it took me a long time to kind of process that what was going on wasn't normal, which I think, especially being so isolated from the rest of the world, like geographically, had a huge impact as well in not being able to see. I remember I can like pick up moments from my childhood, like when I was in school and we'd go on like trips for school or whatever, and we had a lot of like, sometimes we would like have parents who like drove us places and their kids would just be like little shits in the car because their friends were there and it was their parents, and it's normal to just be a little shit to your parents sometimes. And for me, I was just like, no. Like, and just the contrast looking back is really validating, actually, I guess, like rough, but also validating in that I'm allowed to feel like, I can't even think of the words, like I was abused and I'm allowed to say that, even though my parents wouldn't see it that way. Or wouldn't own it or whatever it may be. Or even people who weren't my parents or were family or family friends or whatever, I could say I was abused and they would not validate that. And that's something I'm okay with now because I know my truth, I guess.
So moving away from the home then, what was school like?
Primary school was super chill because it was a very small town. It was a very like tight-knit community. High school was rough because I had to travel the next town over, so it was a bunch of new people that I didn't know, and I wasn't like a sporty kid or anything like that, which was kind of the thing there because there's nothing else to do in the middle of nowhere except play sports and drink. So I was kind of very outcast. I was also like very like – I hadn't even realized myself that I was queer yet, but I was very obviously queer, like real stereotype, and just did not realize that I acted that way kind of and couldn't really control it. Years later, we get an ADHD diagnosis. Who knew? But it was pretty brutal to start with. It got less bad as time went on, but that's also kind of when I had other kind of some family stuff ramp up as well. So it was kind of this ongoing battle of which places better for me to be in. So like, again, I like my kind of my childhood up until the time I was about 18 is like pretty gross story, and then from there I was just being like up and up and up and good and great, But yeah, anytime we have to reflect on the past, it's like, ooh, that's not normal. Like, that's pretty. Yeah. So yeah, I got a fair bit of gay bashing because I didn't come out until I was in college. And yeah, I was kind of like the only gay in the village kind of thing, which is a reference to a show that I've never seen, but I hear it all the time. So yeah, it was very isolating, and I had this realization just over the weekend before we're recording this, actually, that I think my last year of kind of year 12 was kind of the last year before like a lot of the like diversity groups and queer groups and stuff in schools, by working it out in particular, became really common. And I can actually say that, but the college I went to the year after I left was the year they got a queer group. But there's a variety of reasons for that, some of it being staff change, some of it being like internal politics that I probably shouldn't say more about, but I know things now. But yeah, I feel like I was like the last generation, as it were, of people who had no in-school kind of queer supports going.
Mm. At school, did people talk about queer people? Like,
No. I can say that right now. I think we got a brief mention of homosexuality in like a health class when we're doing sexual health stuff. And that's it. I can remember no more. I remember one time, and I was definitely looking back, teachers being like, this is a gay, so we're going to have a chat about like gay marriage with this person. So I was, would have been 2016 was my last year of high school, year 10, which was the site was 2017, was it?
Yeah.
So I remember one time my teachers were just having a chat to me and my group of friends about gay marriage, and looking back, I was like, oh, that was a supportive conversation under the guise of like, oh, gay marriage debate, which is quite sweet. But in terms of the students, there wasn't really any positive support. There was no one who was openly queer there. It was I'm told my younger siblings, my younger brother in particular, he just graduated from year 10 last year, and I'm told that there's now like a diversity group at the school and there's lots of openly queer people. It's, I'm sure, not a perfect experience for them yet. As is the case in most schools, but I'm told that, there's a lot more kind of in place and a lot more talk about it, which is really exciting to hear, because it means people aren't having the same experience I did, which was, for lack of a better term, shit.
You're a bit younger than me.
Yeah.
So, I mean, for me, there wasn't a lot of queer representation in media or anything either.
Yeah.
Do you remember seeing?
No. Ironically, like, talking about my parents, they're terrible people, but one thing, like, when I came out, that was completely fine. So it's this kind of mixed bag of I didn't really have any representation, but, like, my parents have said, specifically my stepmom has said, she knew from a young age that I was queer, gay, and so was completely fine. She was shocked because I originally came out as bisexual, and that's what shocked her when I came out, not because I didn't come out as gay. Was what shocked her. But yeah, in media, also I'm not like a big movie or TV watcher. I've always been a gamer, and even now I find there's not a lot of representation in a lot of games, or it's very off to the side, and especially back, let's say a decade ago, I would have been 13, nearly 14. Mm-hmm. Nothing of that sort in gaming at that time that I can think of, or at least not in like mainstream stuff, which mm-hmm. is what I was playing, because I lived in the middle of nowhere, had no access to find new things, so...
Yeah, it must have been tough down the West Coast, like just not even just being a queer kid, but just...
Just in general, it was rough. Just being a bit of a weirdo and an outcast and a nerd anyways in a pretty rough high school in particular. I think it was tough, would have been tough even if I was straight. And it was just like an extra added bit of fun. Yeah.
You had a circle of friends there?
Kind of, especially in grades nine, kind of float around a bit here and there because of various reasons. And, you know, it's a space to figure myself out and all that kind of stuff. But in grades 9 and 10 in particular, I had like a good group of friends who, you know, I was out to and who were, you know, supportive, and we all kind of looked after each other. Most of them had decent homes, so like that kind of stuff. It was a good time in terms of friends, and some of those friends I'm still like best mates with. One of them just got engaged, actually, and I was like, I'm not ready for this. She told me I have a surprise, and I went, do not tell me you're pregnant. I am not ready for that. And she's like, no, I got engaged. I was like, oh, thank fuck.
Like, it won't be long.
I know. And I'm really not ready for it.
Yeah.
Because I'm also in my very happily single phase, and I'm just like, I really can't deal with it. When I started college, actually, I actually moved from the West Coast to Huonville to live with my grandma, which was my stepmom's mother. So that's kind of how I got out of there, and then I ended up moving out on my own in year 12 because there was some issues happening there. But they weren't bad. It was just really awkward time, plus all the trauma I had kind of built up that I was sorting through. But, yeah, we had in particular that grandma of mine, grandma and grandpa from my stepmom. They have always been in my life. They're actually quite lovely. Always been super supportive. I don't really see them much anymore, but, you know, they had a lot of kind of bright spots in what was a pretty dark time through my childhood. And my dad's parents, they are less good, but they're adequate, like they're there. I don't really talk to them much now. I find them to be a bit I'm probably too mean to people, really. I'm probably too judgy, but I find them to be, it always kind of felt like there was always ulterior motives doing things, or like times where they kind of pitted me and my like older brother against each other in like terms of school grades and that kind of stuff. And I'm like, that's you just like let people live their fucking life.
Yeah. So talking about sexuality then, you said you were obviously the queer kid, but you didn't realise that for a while.
Yeah.
When did you start to realise that?
So it was grade 8 when I came to terms with being quote-unquote bisexual. I'm not, but I did the classic stepping stone thing. And I just want to say right here, bisexual people are valid, and I want to make that very clear. But for me, I did do the stepping stone kind of thing. It was actually the gay bashing that made me, like, question it. And then, just kind of around then. And then it wasn't until college when I came out as gay. It was actually because my friends who, problematically so, but in hindsight actually helped me, were calling me gay because they knew. and that's when I came out as gay, but it was grade 8. And I remember I look back now and I go, have you ever heard the term cognitive dissonance? So it's this idea where the brain is making up any sort of excuse or whatever to protect yourself from whatever the truth is, essentially. So for me, like, I can say that I was like watching gay porn for at least a year before I even considered the fact that I was queer. And it's really interesting looking back to see how far the brain will go to protect, quote unquote, protect itself. Because at the time, you know, it was, again, finger quotations, bad. Yes, that's kind of how that all happened. And then I came out to a few friends, then I came out to my family because it kind of got out, and I was like, well, I want to tell my family and not have them find out through small town drama. You know, everyone knew my secrets before I did. So, yeah, that's how all that happened, I guess.
And when did you first meet another queer person?
Oh, God. I remember when I came out as bisexual when I lived in my small town, there was, my mum mentioned how she spoke to, there was like the resident gay in Strawn who, and their partner, who were like happy to just like sit and have a chat with me, but I never took them up on it because I didn't really know how to like meet strangers. So that was probably like, but I like briefly just talked to them because I used to work at the supermarket in Strawn, so like I kind of knew them. But that was essentially the first queer person I met, I guess. And I think they weren't like, say, like obviously queer again, in that they weren't super effeminate or they didn't dress in a really kind of non-conforming way. So it was probably really a good way for me to meet a queer person. But I think sometimes the kind of sledgehammer approach, which is my approach to things, can be really useful in normalizing what is not considered normal. My own accommodation in year 12, finished all that, and then I spent 2 years unemployed, which was rough. That was also kind of through the COVID. I did get a boyfriend for altogether for 3.5 years, so he was really helpful in me learning to accept myself. There was a while there where I completely cut my family off for a while, which was rough to say the least, but also really a healthy decision in the long run. Yeah, and I've just kind of since then I've been living on my own. I briefly lived with my ex and then I promptly broke up with him. he's a lovely guy, I should say that. But so he was, I first got on Grindr and it was supposed to be a hookup, and then a while later we ended up somehow slow dancing with wine and we kind of went, oh, this is something else. In hindsight, I look back and I really should have stayed single and worked on myself, and there were a lot of issues with that relationship. Again, I want to say he's a good guy, but there were plenty of times where both of us were bad partners for largely trauma reasons, especially myself. But, yeah, he was one of the few queer people I met, and even from there I remember – it wasn't until we broke up and I got back on Grindr that I finally made gay friends, like gay male friends or like non-binary kind of assigned male at birth friends. All I could find was lesbians. So many fucking lesbians in Hobart. I could not find any gay men who would like truly understand my experience as it was. So like I spent a long time kind of struggling with finding peers, I think, that like kind of really lived my experience. Now they're all moving to fucking Melbourne.
Well, how did you find those peers?
Grindr. So it was a mixture of Grindr and also I was volunteering on a project at the Link Youth Health Service. And so five of us signed up to do a specific project, and I made friends with all of the four other people I was volunteering with. And so some some of those are like some of my best friends nowadays, and we were all by just complete coincidence queer. It was a sexual health product that we're all collaborating on, which I think queer people are really passionate about, sexual health, kind of because we are the stigmatized sex group, as it were. But yeah, there was that, and then there was Grindr, and I didn't even like fuck all the people on Grindr who I'm friends with. Some of them I just genuinely, like, we just chatted and went, oh, like, let's just grab a coffee and be friends. And I still do that sometimes. But, yeah, I also started getting more involved. Once I broke up with my ex, I started going out more just in general. Also, my career, I work for TazCard, so I work with a lot of queer people, run into a lot of queer people through my work. So it's just this kind of multi-pronged approach. I go to QT Cabaret in Hobart. A bunch. Hera is a good mate of mine and she's a fucking legend. So, yeah, I just meet – like I started performing, so I meet people through that now, and just all these kind of varied different things. But the main one for me was just teaching myself to leave the house more, which is something I still struggle with. I often – I work a 4-day week, and so often on my 3-day weekend, like I get to Sunday and I go, I don't even know if I've left the house this weekend. I need to be like making myself extrovert more essentially, because it's actually not, I live alone as well. So I'm like, I'm actually not stimulating myself. So kind of this was almost like a health goal for me to make queer friends, in that I was also expanding my comfort zone and doing things. The most recent experience I had with homophobia was a night out in Adelaide. I went over to a conference there, and then we all went on the town at the end of the conference. And my night ended with me, after having some guy be homophobic to me, was me eating a spicy burrito to end the night, which was a great way to end the night. It was like 5 a.m. as well, so it was time to go home. But there's one I always think of, because it happened on Pride, actually. I was probably 19, 20, and I was just walking on my own at the time. I was in Salamanca, I think it was, or nearby Salamanca, and I was just walking up to meet some friends at whatever party place we were going to. But I was on my own, and this car drove past. I had a Pride flag wrapped around my waist, like a skirt, and I had this car drive past and just scream, "Faggot!" And I was like, "Oh, you're so brave, honey." Which didn't really faze me, because, like, that was my high school experience. Like, one of my favourite jokes to tell is, like, when I'm introducing myself to people, is to go, like, "My name's Corey, my pronouns are he, him, or if you like, you can call me by my high school nickname, Faggot." which usually gets a good reaction. I am my target audience. but, yeah, that's, like, one that's always kind of stuck with me. I think just because it was literally, like, the night after the Pride Parade, like the Taz Pride Parade and everything, it just surprised me that it happened at that time. Any other random night out when I'm looking queer as shit, which is usually how I dress when I go out, you know, it wouldn't surprise me, especially, you know, I was walking alone, it was dark, that kind of stuff. But, yeah, that one always kind of stuck with me, I guess, maybe because I was younger as well. I think it was maybe the first kind of time I remember experiencing discrimination in Hobart, because I had a pretty, like, when I went to college, like, I never experienced any sort of negativity. Yeah, that one always stuck out to me, and I never really thought about why until now, but I think it might have been my first kind of key experience with homophobia in Hobart. It's happened a few times randomly here or there.
Do you feel like you've ever let your sexuality or your identity stop you from doing something?
As an adult? As a child and teenager, absolutely.
Yeah.
As an adult, no, but that's, I think it's more of a personality thing, in that I often describe myself as relentless. And one of those things is being relentlessly myself, and it's really important to me, especially after so many years of not being myself for a variety of reasons. As a teenager in particular, it's so important for me to be so aggressively myself that I've never let it stop me from doing anything. There's certainly times still to this day, even when I'm dressed super faggoty. I probably shouldn't say that on a queer podcast, but we'll move on. I still to this day, often, like, when I get a lot of Ubers and just things like lowering my, like, I've had my friends comment on, you know, like, doing a lower voice when I say bye, that kind of stuff. Small things like that. Even if I'm wearing, again, like, the most flamboyant, ridiculous outfit, there's still those little moments where I kind of, without even thinking about it, still cover up theoretically.
Did the marriage plebiscite impact you at all? Like, you were pretty young when that happened,
yeah,
right?
There was only really one time that I think of. There was a friend of mine in college was religious, was some version of Christianity. I forget which one, because there's so many offshoots of that. But she was saying how gay marriage happening in a church, well, I don't support it, was discrimination against a church. And I didn't have like the words at the time to be like, you're full of shit. So it was just like really frustrating, and I didn't have like the knowledge of politics either at the time. Barely now, if I'm honest. I like having mental health, but yeah, that was probably the key one. And just the fact that it was happening, I was aware of. Yeah, but I think overall, like, I had a pretty lucky, like, I had a good supportive group of friends. I was at college at the time. As I said, like, during college, I didn't really experience any homophobia. That's probably, like, the one time that I did, and it was, again, indirect, I guess. It wasn't pointed at me. It was in general. Mm. Yeah, I got pretty away pretty lucky with that one, if I'm honest, which is very, again, lucky and fortunate of me, but because I know not everyone did.
After the marriage equality, or the Religious Freedoms Act, was something that was talked a lot about.
From my limited knowledge on it, it's bullshit from memory. I can't remember the details, but I remember reading through it at one point and just being like, it's bullshit and it shouldn't be happening. And I know it keeps rearing its head up, and it's a really significant thing for queer folk. Again, I keep very little, I like, as much as I need to on politics, but again, because it just genuinely ruins my mental health if I have too much. I've got mad respect for people who do politics and are like progressive and don't like rip their hair out, because that's a key thing I miss about my ex, is he was really involved in politics, and so I always knew what I stood for through him. I remember the federal election happened while we were together, and I just went, who am I voting for? Because I knew our goals aligned, but I did not want to like look into the specifics because, again, mental health. I mean, a lot of my kind of queer activism-y type stuff is through my work. So I do a lot of like I work for the Tasmanian Council on AIDS, hepatitis-related diseases, so I do a lot of sex ed type stuff, a lot of just queer education. So it's kind of, I do a lot of work with young people in particular on kind of as just being a peer in general, but also providing sexual health education targeted towards queer folk that's also delivered by a young person, which I think is really useful, because I know when I was back at college, kind of the younger someone was, the more comfortable I was approaching them. So I kind of... that's kind of what I'm doing with the queer community these days as well, and just generally kind of going places, doing things, trying things out. I'm very aggressively me, but I'm also still very much experimenting with the world. My past relationship caused me to feel quite limited, and then also my family stuff before that, so I'm kind of now in this true freedom from outside expectations, and I'm just running at the world and grabbing things as they come at the moment. So my kind of queer activism stuff is, you know, share and repost and, you know, generally don't be a cunt. But yeah. It's not super specific or involved. It's just kind of highlighting other people's voices who are more appropriately educated on the specifics of what's happening.
You said earlier you're performing now. What are you doing?
I do stand-up comedy sometimes now. Yeah. I've always used humour to cope. And in college, actually, it was when the first idea was put in my head. I found a comedian, Reese Nicholson, who's a great Australian queer comedian, came out as non-binary as well. But they have a very similar style to how I do my humour. And so from that, I ended up writing content, and now I just overshare the embarrassing stories from my life. That's kind of, it's my little bit of activism, I think, because someone who spent many, many years being super duper anxious and still has an anxiety disorder, something I've learned to embrace is the embarrassing moments in life, and just to laugh at them with everyone else, because it makes everyone more comfortable. Everyone does them. Nobody remembers them. The only people who remember mine are the ones that I tell on stage. So, yeah, I just tell the dodgy, weird moments from my life when usually like when my ADHD kicks in, I blurt something out that I should not have blurted out to like some random. But I often perform at QT Cabaret. So, and that's every 2-ish months. So that kind of gives me a nice time frame. To so
people wanted to see you do stand up, follow them.
QT Cabaret, yep.
Perfect.
And also just go in general because they do amazing stuff for the community. And Hera is an absolute queen who deserves the world.
Do you have a message to anyone out there who might be a young queer person, maybe living on the West Coast or in another isolated area? A message you wish you had heard?
You will learn to love yourself. You will find your people. I know right now that doesn't really help. A lot of the time we get this, you know, thing, it gets better thing, which is really true, but in the moment does not fucking help. So if you're struggling, hold on just a bit longer. Get out if you need to. Sometimes, even if you do end up back where you grew up or because you loved it, sometimes seeing the world from a different perspective can be really positive. And sometimes essentially a fresh start can be a great way to kind of reset yourself and find who you want to be, especially I find with like family and stuff, often there's expectations, which is usually great because they want the best for you, but sometimes you need to have that space to figure out what you want, not what they want. Remember to take time for yourself separate from work or activism or whatever it may be, because I know for me, I kind of turned a lot of my trauma, my experience into my work. But it did cause me to, as much as I love my job and I still love my job, I did make my identity too attached to my work, and had to learn how to let go from that so I could let myself thrive outside of work as well, which is not queer specific, but I think a lot of queer people are a lot of involved in kind of activism and social justice and that kind of stuff a lot of the time. So, yeah.
Thank you so much. No worries. Really appreciate it.
Thank you.
If this episode has raised any issues for you, please take some time to reflect and ensure you reach out for support if you need it. If you are listening in Tasmania, you can contact Working It Out via their website or calling 6231 1200 during business hours. If you need immediate mental health support, please contact Lifeline on 13 1114 or Beyond Blue on 1300 22 4636. Both services are available 24/7. If you would like to get in touch or share your story on this podcast, please send us an email at nwpride@outlook.com. This podcast is produced by Northwest Pride, a community group based across the north, northwest and west coast of Tasmania. They host events and social inclusion opportunities for anyone who is a part of the LGBTIAQ+ community, their friends and allies. This podcast is made possible by the support of Working It Out. You can hear future episodes and all of our past episodes on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts from. Please follow, rate, and review if you can. It does help us to reach more folks who might enjoy or benefit from hearing these amazing life stories. We'll be back soon. Take care of yourself and each other.